Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, the only moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Darkcast Network, bringing our indie podcasts out of the shadows.
Greetings, witches and beautiful souls. Swale's back with another amazing moot loot for the month of October spooky season. I gave you 2 episodes last week in hope that you might send me a little vote for this amazing little competition I've entered for the best documentary and news podcast. Still time to vote for that. If you could, that'd be awesome. I will link the show notes below. This is a moot loop again. I recorded a long time back, probably May time, with Sarah Parks, who is a lovely lady and all-around good egg. She knows stuff about parenting and co-regulation, the magic of relationships, really. Relationships in social situations and relationships with your kids. It's a really good listen, and I appreciate it's not so much witchy. It'll always have a witchy element, but I'll always have the parenting side of witchcraft present in my own witchcraft journey and my own growing and learning. And it feels like really good timing because I've just written my last column for Pagans of the North, which was all about witching with kids. My children are a big part of my life and I'm learning to be a good parent always. I've had a really good year with them, learning all this co-regulation stuff and how to be a better parent and how to make a better decision and let stuff go and be a good pagan at it as well. You know, combining paganism, witchcraft and parenting all together is a huge part of who I am and will always be a little bit in the podcast. And to begin with, it was about witching with kids. That was the idea of this podcast, and it's progressed into just general witching. And this little underlining theme will always weave its way through the bed of the podcast as it becomes a glorious magical quilt of witchy wonders. So I hope you enjoy it, and it might be worth listening to it, even if you're not a parent, just because there's a little gems of wisdom in there about co-regulation and maybe understanding others that are suffering a little bit and we don't know how to interact with them. So yeah, enjoy this podcast, and I will see you next week for the last installment of the spooky season Moot Loop Bonanza. And then it'll be back to normal schedule every 2 weeks, one Moot Loop and one Solitary Witch episode. If you'd like to support me throughout this, you can do this in a number of ways. You could join my Patreon for a little as £1 a month. You could leave me ratings and reviews wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you're feeling a need to tip your witch, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com. Or you can just tell everybody you meet who may listen to podcasts, who loves a witchy pagan alternative lifestyle, and recommend the Bellwitch podcast. Right, here we go. Here's another Moot Loop guest on the Bellwitch podcast, Sarah Parks. Hi, how are you doing?
Hello, it's lovely to be here.
Welcome to the show. We got linked up via the lovely Leanne, who's one of the podcast super fans, my little cheerleader. She's always there going like, how about this, how about that? And so she's linked us up. So I'm drinking a nice cup of tea in her honour.
Nice. And I saw your teapot, which is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, it's right posh. It's the whole cup and saucer shebang and like loose tea leaves. And Leanne will appreciate that.
Very nice. Homage to Leanne.
A homage. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're going to talk to us about today?
Yeah. So I'm Sarah Parks. I am a conscious parenting and living coach, and I live in Scotland, in Edinburgh, with my two kids and my husband. I have just really come on the podcast to talk about life, and I suppose talk about this aspect, this sense of sort of conscious living and living outside of the box, I suppose, or the kind of mainstream. I thought would be an interesting topic to talk about, and because I feel like that really fits in with this podcast, but also in with this sense of when you're somebody who is outside of the kind of mainstream, it's easy for people to misunderstand. And I think, you know, this is a witchy podcast, and I think witches have always been misunderstood, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've got the magic of co-regulation written down.
Ah, have you now?
No idea what that's about.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you've got that written down. Can you tell I've forgotten that that's what we're going to talk about? The magic of co-regulation.
That as well.
That's all part of it.
Cool.
That is all part of it. So I will absolutely talk about the magic of co-regulation, because it really is. It really is magic, or it can feel like magic, but actually it's actually science.
Oh, I like a bit of overlap.
Although I have to say, I am not a researcher and I am not a scientist. I am not a scientist at all. I really land more on the creative side of things. However, you know, there are certain universal kind of laws, right, that we're subject to on this planet. The magic of co-regulation is connected to one of those. So I will talk about that.
Okay. And you're a witch.
Don't actually call myself a witch, I'll be honest. I do sometimes.
Yeah.
But I don't really call myself a witch. I suppose I'm not deeply witchy, although I will say, well, I am a witch, really.
I think we all are a little bit, aren't we?
We're all a little bit witchy. And I think part of the reason for that is because, like, I've never been mainstream, you know, I've never fitted into the boxes. I was talking with my mum a while ago, and her grandmother used to look after her when she was young, and was, you know, she was like the kind of local herbalist, really. You know, people came to her and she would mix, she had a garden and she would go and collect the local roots and seaweed and all kinds of stuff and make tinctures and all sorts of stuff to help them heal, you know. I do kind of feel like I come from a bit of a witchy line.
Yeah, your heritage.
Medicine women, maybe. My mum is originally from Jamaica, so this is her Jamaican grandmother, right? Who was actually part Spanish as well. So, bit of mixed heritage there, which is probably very common on an island that, was heavily populated during slavery and people were brought from all kinds of places,
Yeah, I mean, I noticed when you just give me the call then that you had a little silver goddess on.
Yes, I
And
absolutely have a
I were
goddess.
like, oh, I've got a little silver goddess on as well.
So I say I'm not witchy, but
You are really.
I often have a goddess on. So deep down, I am really.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I suppose I'm not so overtly witchy. I don't describe myself as a witch, and I'm certainly spiritual and very much lean that way for sure. So the magic of co-regulation. So like I said, I'm a conscious parenting and living coach, and that's really following a path of awareness, really, of being aware of ourselves and how we want to relate to our children, and very much a kind of gentle kind of parenting approach and conscious parenting approach. Basically, the aim of this kind of style of parenting is really to love and accept your child the way they are, for who they are, and yourself. That's the basis of it, really, is love and acceptance and trying to live in a way that allows you to be as fully yourself as possible, and your child, which is a real challenge. It's such a challenge because that's not how within our society that parenting has been traditionally viewed. And so I think there's a lot more awareness of these ways of parenting now, and a lot more people wanting to parent in gentle, conscious, positive, calmer ways. There's so many names for essentially the same thing, positive parenting, unconditional parenting, or all of these different terms, which is essentially the same kind of thing. And what we come up against is how we were brought up ourselves and what the mainstream society is doing. So although the approaches that I use have been around for a very long time, and some of the tools that I learned from and resources that I use and share and encourage people to add to their toolkit have been around since the 70s, right? But like many things, I'm actually quite shocked still that it's not more mainstream. And I forget because I'm so in this world, right? I'm so in this way of doing things and with my own family, helping other people, supporting other people who want to take this kind of approach, that I forget that not everybody knows about this, that not everybody is doing that or understands fully what it is, so that people are trying not to shout at their kids and talk in a calm voice and things like that, but there's way more to it than that, So this topic today, the magic of co-regulation. So I talked about the sciencey bit, right? So I'm going to dive into the sciencey bit.
Oh.
Yes. So essentially, when like everybody knows what a vibe is, right? You go into a room, you can feel the vibe. And if somebody gets upset, it can feel like a downer. It can feel like it's dragging you down. Somebody's really upset or whatever. And that's because we energetically resonate with each other. What happens with our children essentially is, and with other people that we're, in proximity to, we either join them where they are, or they start joining us where we are. And that is co-regulation. And it's magic. So essentially, we start resonating at the same level, really. When our children are born, when they're babies, they rely on us for survival by co-regulating to their parents, right? Especially their mother, to the point of their heartbeats, kind of syncing with us. So they need that close contact. They need to, and they're constantly looking to the caregivers around them to see, well, how is it in the world? How you know, what's safe, what's not safe, but also how to feel about things, which is why when you know, if a child bumps themselves and you're like, oh my God, that's awful, that must really hurt, and da, 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 then they take their cue from you to go, oh, that must be really hurt. I must I and when things hurt, we cry and da, da, da. And so, you know, they're taking that cue. Whereas if your child bumps themselves and you're like, oh, that must have hurt, let's give it a rub, and then off you go, then they're like, oh, well, that's not a big thing, so we're going to carry on. So there's it happens in little ways like that, this kind of co-regulation. But where it's really magic is when parents know actually that you're far more powerful than you think you are. When you understand that you actually can influence the people around you, you can support them to regulate. So you can bring the calm, you can bring the, you know, the good vibes so that they calibrate to you. Equally, we can calibrate to them and end up, they get upset, we get upset, there's everybody gets upset and it all explodes. And I call that adding fuel to the fire. There's a fire going on over here of upset, right? And we join it and we add fuel to it, and that makes it explode, right? Instead of things getting better, it gets worse. So we've all kind of experienced that, right? Where instead of things calming down, the upset increases. And that's when we're co-regulating with our child, or with the, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a child that's gotten upset, right? That's when we're co-regulating to them. And so the law that I was talking about is the law of resonance. That we resonate on the same kind of frequency. What I think is magic about this is when people know, when people understand, ah, right, okay, so I'm not actually at the mercy of everything that's happening. If I can regulate myself and manage my own triggers and what have you, then I can support and influence my child and the people around me. And that is magic and that's powerful.
I cannot believe how much I relate to this. I am
Yeah.
always working really hard to not pass this because I used to irritate my mum, you know, just by being there. And I'm really aware of it and I do suffer with it as a parent myself. So
Yeah.
my older one really picks it up because she's super good at seeing between the lines and you know, she knows what's going on. She's only 8. She's really clued up. And she
Yeah.
mirrors me so often. We're just a couple of mirrors, just like bouncing off each other.
Yes.
And I'll talk to her and she'll get so arsy with me. And I'm just like, you're arsy because I'm arsy with you. So I'm going to let it go.
Yes. That's such a great observation. Yeah, because I mean, yeah, you've heard it said a lot of times, probably, that we are mirrors of each other, and it's so true. So I think when as parents we understand that, and we've got to go first. This is the really hard bit of parenting, actually, is that we've got to go first. Instead of expecting our children to let it go or be the adult, as it were, in the relationship, right?
Which
We've
we are.
got to be the ones to let it go. You know, we've got to be the ones to recognize, oh, right, actually saying something right now about this is going to add fuel to the fire instead of improving it. So I just need to just take a moment or take a breath or, you know.
I mean, because sometimes I still feel like that little kid,
Yeah.
because there's a lot of trauma that's being passed down. I mean, because my mum's parents were like wartime parents. They grew up with children should be seen and not heard, and
Yeah.
you know, manners make everything better, and you know, like money's tight. And so my mum was a real almost victim of it, you know, and she passed that down to me. But then also I was a young carer when I was less than Florence's age now, my eldest daughter. And I did everything, you know, like I looked after my nan who was elderly because she was housebound. I was running a house and I was paying bills and I was going to the post office for my nan's gyro and stuff. Like Florence don't even wash up and she gets annoyed with me, you know, when I ask her to do something like put your shoes away. And then she goes like, life's so fair. And my inside my head, I'm going like, you've no idea when I were your age, I was running a house. I have to catch myself and go, yeah, but that was so wrong and abnormal. It wasn't a good thing.
And, you know, I love what you're talking about here because it is this sense of, I think one of the things people struggle a lot with gentle parenting or conscious parenting is that swinging from one extreme to the other. So, like with you know, you are in one extreme of, you know, having to run a house, be a carer, do all these things, which it isn't fair for a child to be expected to do all of those things. It's, you know, it's too much, you know. And it can be easy to swing the other way because, you know, we don't want our children to experience some of the hardship that we experienced, etc. Therefore, we protect them. And then, you know, we've got, you know, situations. Sometimes I work with parents whose children are leaving home and, you know, they're not really that well equipped for being out in the world. You know, we can swing from one extreme to the other. And I think that is the challenge when we come from this place of, well, I don't want my children to have the hardship that I had or to experience what I did, to kind of check in with, well, what do you actually want outside of trying to move away from that, the pain of that for yourself and trying to compensate for that and avoid your child having the same kind of experience. What is the vision actually of what you want? And that's part of the work that I do with people, kind of one-to-one and in my mastermind as well, is for people to be thinking about, well, having this awareness around their own triggers, but also the past stuff that they're compensating for. So that's not running your life, if you see what I mean, and your decisions and how you do things. So you've got freedom from that because it's not a bad thing. You know, it drives a lot of stuff. I mean, it's probably driven my whole business. You know, my journey with gentle and conscious parenting is totally because I want my children to ha experience some of the things that I experienced. So, you know, I was looking for, well, how do I want to parent? How do I want to do this? And then I found all this stuff. And then, you know, my eldest is 15. So sort of when she was kind of 1 year old, I started. So it's like 14 years of really walking this path.
It is hard. It's a battle every day. It's like you learn on job, don't you, with parenting, as you do
Totally.
most things. And I was surprised just how it didn't come to me, you know, really naturally. I really struggled earlier on when she was born 8 years ago. And then my second one, I think I did a lot of things different. And it shows in the behavior and the just who they are. My eldest is such a pessimist, and I'm always trying to get to do gratitudes when we walk to school and smell the flowers, and we're pagans, let's be pagan.
Yeah, oh, it's interesting, isn't it? Well, there's that saying, when we know better, we do better, right? It's a Maya Angelou quote, I think, isn't it?
And I use that all the time. It's one of the best quotes.
And so, you know, we have to be really kind to ourselves. It's such a hard job. It's such a hard job. There's no manual. You've got to work out how to do it. There's lots of different conflicting advice and ways of doing things. You know, use a naughty step, don't use a naughty step, blah, blah, blah. You know, all this different stuff. And you have to decide on what path you're going to follow, what it is. Does it feel okay for you to do things in certain ways? Does it work for your child? Because the way you all might want to do things might not be what they're into. You know, they might not be into doing gratitude, and it's like, it's great. They might not be into it, you know. It's like meeting them where they're at as well, and honoring ourselves as well. And oh, there's just so much to it, right? So much to being a parent and finding our way with it.
I always apologize because I say, you know, like, I'm really sorry I messed up there. That's a big deal. When I was growing up, my mum never, ever apologized.
Do you think it's a thing of the era? Because
Yes,
do you know
definitely.
what? My parents never apologized either, and they would do some really rubbish things and just never said, oh, sorry, I messed up or I made a mistake there. Or, and I have to say, as a child, I think I often felt like I was being blamed for these things because, you know, they'd get annoyed, but they wouldn't say, oh, you know, that was my mistake or whatever.
No, it's definitely a generational
Ever.
thing.
Yeah, is, isn't it? Must be. I have to say, I'm really loving being on here and hearing your accent.
Oh, thank you. It's a selling point.
Yeah, because I lived in Leeds for 16 years. And that's where I lived before moving to Edinburgh, where I am now. So I just love hearing a Yorkshire accent.
Introducing the Jasper Cacao Project, your gateway to spiritual enlightenment through the power of cacao. Jasper Cacao is ethically sourced, fairly traded, organically grown, and crafted with love to bring you a truly transformative experience. The Jasper Cacao Project honours this ancient tradition by offering you the purest form of cacao, free from additives and preservatives. With every kilo sold, Jasper Cacao donate funds to the UK charity Plant Your Future, enabling farmers to sustainably grow their crops in the most eco-friendly way. Check out my bio for a discount on your first purchase, where you will receive 15% exclusive affiliate discount. Expanding love with every sip.
You know, I can tell you a little bit more about how I got into doing what I do. I mean, I've hinted at it a little bit with, you know, my sort of background. I think the biggest thing for me was this sense of wanting to make sure that my children had a secure attachment, really, from a young age. You know, I'm obviously aware that the first 7 years of a child's life is really a very important time when they're kind of personalities forming and how they view the world is forming. And so that first 7 years is really important. For me, the first 7 years of my life was a bit turbulent, you know, and moving about. And I also had some time where I didn't live with either of my parents, which I think was very difficult, kind of in a unofficial kind of foster caring kind of situation. Yeah, it's, I think, really difficult not to have your mum or your dad there. And I think children are resilient and there is an impact from these things. And so, you know, I suppose I knew I very much wanted my children to have, to feel kind of secure and to feel like they had consistency, I suppose, particularly in those first 7 years. And you know, it is something that they've really benefited from, I think, that wasn't the case for me. And so that was a real driving force behind what I do and the approach for myself and my family, but also I help parents get these kind of approaches really working for them, because it can be tricky. I mean, I mentioned earlier about this thing of, okay, so, you know, I don't want to do it like that. I don't want to do it like my parents did and punish my children and, you know, take things off them and all this kind of stuff. Although I know some people still do that. But then you're like, but what then, what can I do then? How can I get them to, you know, cooperate? Or how can I get them to be like a part of the family who, you know, helps out and all of that kind of stuff? You know, it really takes learning some skills. Mm-hmm. And yet, like you said, it didn't come naturally to you. And that's one of the myths. People think that parenting is going to come naturally to them or should come naturally to them. So I think it can be challenging to ask for help because there's this expectation that you should naturally know how to do it and you should automatically somehow know how you want to parent when there's so many different ways. I mean, you wouldn't go and do any other role and expect to know all about it without some training, right? You know, even doing this, doing a podcast, you've had to learn stuff. You've had to train a bit for it, you know, to learn how to edit and all these things. It doesn't just happen. And parenting's the same.
There's just a worry, isn't there, that you're going to mess your kids up. I mean, that's probably every parent's biggest worry, like, oh my God, what have I done to them and messed them up? But like you say, kids are resilient, aren't they? And as long as we make an effort to maybe discuss it with them, then that's all right to make mistakes. Because half of the learning is you make mistakes. We're human. We're allowed to make mistakes. Can't be perfect first time. I make a big song and dance about asking for help because my eldest doesn't, you know, she gets cross with herself because she's not perfect the first time. It's like, where's that even come from? I've never been that person, not as a mum anyway. It's almost like it's come through the bloodline or something. It's really weird.
this expectation to be perfect is it's really unhelpful. So there's a couple of things you talked about there, was this the perfection thing, but also the messing, the fear of messing your kids up. There's a lot of pressure on parents and a lot of emphasis, and when things don't go well, parents get blamed, right? If they're not behaving at school, parents get blamed. It's like they're spending more time at school than there are at home, you know, in a week when they're while they're at school. So,
I
you know,
know,
a lot of the
yeah.
time they're sleeping. So,
But even at school, recently they had a talk about attendance in our school, and it's like 94%, which is amazing.
that is
And
amazing.
she came home and said, "Oh, the headmaster told us off for not having good attendance." I said, "Well, how big was it?" She said, 94%. I was a bit like, "What? No. Have you
That
got
sounds
the wrong end
pretty
of the
good.
stick here?" So I don't know if she heard it differently or because in her head she's like, "We can do better."
Well, maybe that's what they've said,
I
but you
know,
know,
it's weird.
I think they're under pressure as well, because you know they're under pressure to have attendance high, and because that is kind of a goal set it externally as well. Somebody's bright idea to increase attendance is to punish people. This punishment model, right, for lower attendance. So I don't know if the schools get punished and then they pass punishing that on to parents, you know, for their children not being able to attend. So I think when children are struggling with attendance and with going to school and anxiety-based school avoidance and things like that, I think sometimes that there can be a lot of pressure on parents and threats of fines and things like that, which threatening anybody, yes, it might change their behavior, but it's not a great way of doing it. You hold a gun to somebody's head, they will cooperate with you.
Oh,
Is
it's
that
horrible.
really how you want to? It's crazy that that's the go-to method. Instead of supporting people and finding out what's, you know, what's challenging, what's difficult. And yeah, so that, I mean, that's
I
a whole other
know.
topic.
It just made me really cross, I think. Yeah, I give her mental health days, you know, when she wakes up sad and she just wants to sit with me and cuddle me all day. It's like, yeah, let's do it. You know, my mum would never, ever let me have a day off unless I was poorly sick and dying.
And actually, it's this lack of awareness or acknowledgement that, you know, your mental health is as important as your physical health. But yeah, circling back to this fear of messing up our children, there's a lot of pressure to get things right as a parent with no definition of what right is, you know. It's sort of like an impossible task. But, you know, as humans, we're going to struggle with stuff. We're going to have things that happen that are traumatic experiences that we then need to learn how to process. It's not about avoiding having experiences, because for one person, they'll have something happen that feels like a massive trauma. That feels also, you know, in our society's view, as a big thing, like, I don't know, a parent dying or something like that, something big, right? But they're also what can be deemed to be little things that people are going to have trauma from. Like, they're, I don't know, their parent being late to pick them up, for instance. You know, it could be all kinds of things. And it's not about, we're human, we're going to have reactions, we're going to feel triggered by things. It's not about trying to eliminate all triggers ever, because that's impossible. Nobody's ever going to be able to do that. But it's about having tools and learning how to process those things, to learn how to work through that, understand what was going on, understand how you feel, and acknowledge that is massive. Acknowledging those feelings is so crucial and so key for, and not being alone with them. And that's the biggest role that parents play, is not trying to remove all hardships and remove all awful things. Of course, that's our natural response. We want to do that for our kids. We want to protect them. And we can't protect them from everything. What we can be is there to support them and be an ally and be an advocate for them and be an enabler for them and have a great time with them and play with them and, you know, all of these things. and help them navigate life, learn about life, and learn about how to understand their own feelings, learn how to regulate themselves, how to move through, understand what a trigger is, you know, when a big emotion gets triggered, and understand when that happens for them, and how to move through that, because it's not about stopping these things. And that's the thing, I think that's what people can get into, this trying to stop things happening. And, you know, there is a saying, what you resist persists. It's not about stopping, it's about allowing, actually, and allowing those things to move through and get processed.
And not trying to fix stuff as well, I think.
Yeah.
People automatically want to fix things. And I'm dealing in that at the moment, just being like, this is the problem. Let's acknowledge the problem. And trying to get, it's about trying to get the kids, isn't it, to figure it out themselves.
Yeah, figure it out themselves, or support them to figure it out, you know. And within the work that I do in my mastermind and the one-to-one work that I do, I give people processes for doing that, for supporting their child to work through, supporting them, their partners. They can use it in their businesses. They can use it at work. They can use it with their partners, with their children. You know, having ways and structures for having collaborative conversations so that you can work out what the challenge is and how you're going to deal with it, and working through things together. Yeah, there's a lot to it.
There is.
There's a lot to it. And it's one of those roles that is so always there, isn't it? It's always there. 24/7, really. It's not, you don't really get a holiday from it. You don't get a break from it. It's not like a job, is it? Where you're like, well, you know, I can just leave that.
And it's always evolving as well. You think you've nailed something, and then something else pops up, and then you're like, oh.
I remember when my eldest was born, and my sister-in-law, her advice was, it'll just keep changing. So once you think you've got one thing sussed, it will just change. And so she said, it doesn't really get better, it just gets different.
Yes.
And it's different. You know, there's absolute joys and loveliness at all the different ages. And there's the challenges of all the different ages and stages. You know, I was talking to my mum the other day, and she was like, oh, I love the toddler years. Absolutely love that. You know, that's a time when she really enjoyed. She's been through teenagers as well with one child. She was like, I did not enjoy that bit so much. you know, there'll be ages and stages where you find them easier than others as well. But yeah, it's ever evolving. And the thing is, it's for life. It is for life. No matter what, for everybody, once you become a parent, it is for life, no matter your circumstances. Obviously, there are parents who are very involved with their kids and live with their children. There are parents who have never met their children. But either way, you still became a parent. You're just different types of parents. And that never changes. But whereas, you know, you can get divorced from a partner, or you can devolve a business or something, but you're forever, once you've created a life, you're forever linked with that person. You're forever their parent.
And it is lovely to have. I mean, I've got my own little witchy team now. You know, there's me and my two girls.
Nice.
And we have fun, you know, with Daddy, who's the only boy in the house. You know, we play on that quite a lot. And it is nice to have, now they're of an age, 8 and 5, where we can go out and have conversations and share witchy stuff. Florence really loves making spell jars and has crystals for sleeping. And, you know, I'm really enjoying the time and the age. Tweenies come, is it? What is it? Tweenager.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm preparing.
Yeah, you've got one approaching, that tweenage. It's a tricky one. When they kind of hit around 9, there's a big shift that happens, like this 9-year change.
Oh, goddess.
Yeah. Anything between 8 and 10, that can kind of happen. But yeah, around age 9, there's this shift, which is, it's like a little precursor to, and a little echo from toddlerhood, and a precursor to teen. But there's definitely a shift that happens. But you know, I think it's probably there to sort of prepare you for for the teenage years when they're in the shift.
I got this.
Yeah. So I think it gives it, you know, it happens in kind of incremental stages, these changes going through. But it's so lovely, you know, the ages your girls are at. It's so nice. I've got girls as well. They're 8 and 5. That's
really, yeah. I love it. Yeah. It's been lovely to talk to you. Have you got one like solid tip you tell everybody to help them if they're struggling with parenting that we could finish on before we plug you?
I think linking back to the magic of co-regulation is to make sure as a parent that you top yourself up. Like, you can't pour from an empty cup. And ideally, with your beautiful teacup and saucer, you want to be so topped up yourself that you're actually giving from your saucer. How amazing would that be? And I know people talk about self-care a lot, but it is so crucial. It is so crucial because it's very hard for us to respond to our children in the way that we really want to if we're really depleted. You know, you'll know yourself, and I know when I'm exhausted and I'm really busy and what have you, I'm a lot more snappy and I'm more likely to shout at my kids, right? Because I haven't had enough sleep and I'm depleted and I've forgotten that just like my phone, I need topping up. I need energy, you know, I need feeding and topping up. So that's the piece of advice that I think I would give to people wanting to be able to make use of the magic of co-regulation. It starts with you. So you've got to regulate yourself, and self-care will help you do that.
And I would say as well, if you're worrying about being a good parent, then that by default makes you a good parent. When somebody said that to me, it helped me so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if that's something you're worrying about, then you care enough to even be worrying about it, right?
And you want to do the work, you know, you're looking to do the work.
Yeah. And, you know, and for anybody who's wanting support with that, with doing the work, with finding out ways of parenting that's in alignment with you, because I suspect lots of the people who probably listen to this podcast are on this kind of, probably more open, more aware of how they move through the world and want to apply that to not just their life but their parenting life as well.
So where can we find you, Sarah?
So you can find me at spcoaching.co.uk. that will point you to all my various things, but I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram and all the different places. So I'm Sarah Parks on LinkedIn. I'm How to Talk So Kids Will Listen UK on Instagram, and Sarah Parks on Facebook. So those are all the places you can find me if you're looking for me.
I must say, your newsletter, which I've been signed up to for ages, is really good. And I read it every time. It's just so helpful, honestly.
Oh, that's so lovely to hear. It's interesting with newsletters because people rarely reply to them. So if you get anybody's newsletter by email, send them a little reply. They will be so delighted to actually hear back.
I didn't know that was a thing. I thought it was like an automatic MailChimp thing, but
with emails, if you know, I think that would be such a lovely thing to do today. Give some love out by replying to somebody's newsletter that you get and just to say something nice about it, because that would make somebody's day, because you know, people spend such a lot of time and effort crafting these things and mostly don't hear anything back. So, or leave a comment under the podcast, or one or another episode or a podcast, just anything like that. It's just so lovely, I think, for people to get a response in this digital world.
So, listener, that's your call to action. Every episode, I try and do a little call to action for them.
Yay!
But you've got your own podcast as well, haven't you, Sarah?
I do. I have the Legacy Life podcast. Yeah. Which is really about, when we think about consciously creating our lives, and it's about thinking about what the legacy that you're creating is, because we're all every day creating a legacy. you know, whether we're conscious about it or not, and we have an impact on others. And so this idea of becoming a bit more aware, a bit more conscious of that, and, yeah, and how we impact others and our children and everything.
I will link that in the show notes below.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Oh, it's been so lovely speaking with you today. And I hope people have got some nice nuggets from this. And I'd also, you know, if people are struggling with, you know, regulating themselves or their children's emotions and big feelings, then, you know, I have things that can support with that. So do reach out and get in touch.
You have been listening to the Bellwitch podcast, created with love and magic by me, Swales, the friendly green witch. I love to hear from you, and I absolutely love to celebrate you. If you have a podcast or a business, a witchy business, a pagan related topic you love to talk about, you can reach me on thebellwitchpodcast@yahoo.com. Send me a trailer and I will absolutely play it, because there is magic in sharing audiences amongst podcasts. Music by Jeff Harvey of Pixabay. The official Bell Witch photographer is the lovely Beverly Thornton. Thank you so much for choosing the Bell Witch podcast to fill your ears. Stay magical, witches.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.